Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the June 18th, 2025 meeting of the Board of the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District. And next, we're going to have the flag salute. I'd like to ask Director Moreno, please, to lead us in the pledge. Thank you.
I'd be pleased. Please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I should have asked you ahead of time. I'm sorry. All right. Now, if we could please have the roll call.
Director Darris is absent. Director Eccles.
Here.
Director Gibson.
Here.
Director Hammond.
Here.
Director Marks.
Here.
Director Moreno. Here. Director Newton is absent. Director Ortiz Lake.
Here.
Director Paulding.
Here.
Director Pichon.
Here.
Director Robert.
Here.
Director Sechrist is absent.
Thank you. So we have a quorum. And now it's time to go on to the consent agenda. And I'm going to ask for public comment on any of the consent agenda items. Do we have any public comment on the consent agenda items? No. All right. So then I have a question. Does anyone on the board wish to pull any of these three items, A1, A2, A3, for further discussion or questions of staff?
I'll move approval of consent, Madam Chair.
Very good.
Second by Ortiz Lake.
All right. It's been seconded, a move by Director Gibson and seconded by Don Ortiz Lake. Roll call, please.
Motion is to approve the consent agenda items A1 through A3. Motion is made by Director Gibson, seconded by Director Ortiz Lake. Director Eccles.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Pichon.
Me? Pichon.
Yes, yes. Pichon.
Sorry. I fell asleep.
Director Robert.
Questions complicated?
Director Ortiz Legg.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. All right, now we're going to go on to the public comment period for people wishing to address this board on matters other than scheduled items. Do we have any public comment on non-agenda items? Seeing none and nothing coming in via email, I'll close the public comment period and go on to the air pollution control CO's report. And is there a public comment on that?
Director Marks, I think we normally take public comment after the APCO's report is provided.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Good. Okay. So now I'd like to ask Gary Willey to please give his report.
Well, for my final report, I'm going to delegate this to the upcoming APCO, Carl Tupper, and take my swan song bow and thank you all for your support over all these years. And I know you have a very tough job to do, trying to balance everything that you do. And know that I appreciate every one of you's viewpoints and your passions for your jobs. And I appreciate you very much. And that I'll say bye.
So let's continue with the report.
All right, good morning. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Bear with me for 1 second while I bring things up. Okay, so I'd like to start. There's a couple bills that we're tracking through the state legislature. The first is AB 14. This is basically an expansion of the Blue Whales and Blue Skies program. So as I think just about all of you have been here when we passed, when we brought this item to you several board meetings ago, this is a voluntary vessel speed reduction program along the Pacific Coast here, the shipping channels, where it's currently it's kind of a coalition of air districts and some other entities to try to get vessels to voluntarily slow down. Because when they slow down, they save an enormous amount of fuel, and that translates into a tremendous savings both in greenhouse gases and also NOx emissions. And that's the blue skies part. The blue whales part of this is it also reduces whale strikes. So it's been a very successful program. There's no funding. There aren't, like, the incentives are not financial, but rather it's kind of like dolphin safe tuna. They get to put a, you know, put a label on it, and it looks good, and it's good PR for them. So it's a popular program. And this bill, AB 14, would make it a statewide program. Still voluntary, but it would expand it all along the coast of the state. So, you know, we support that bill. We're tracking it. It's winding its way through the Senate right now, and it's looking good. You know, don't count your eggs before they hatch, but we do expect that it will be approved. The other bill we're tracking has to do with board member compensation. So until very recently, we were paying our board members, at least our members from the cities, $100 per meeting. However, last year, the large multi-county districts had a bill passed that would allow them to pay their members a stipend for their meetings, which kind of raised the question of, like, what is the legal authority that small districts like we have to pay these stipends? So as a result of that, these stipends have been on hold, but there's this bill, AB 471, that is working its way through the state legislature with district support that would allow single county districts such as ourselves to pay board member stipends. So large boards already have this, or they got that passed last year. And this would allow the single member district, such as our own, to pay that. You all would still need to, you know, pass a resolution to start them up again. But it would allow up to $200 per meeting per board member upon your approval. So we're tracking that. That one also looks good. There's maybe a little bit of headwind in the Senate local government committee, but this is a bill that's supported by the districts that would be affected by it. On the national front, the one thing I'll mention, which has been in the news lately, is the waiver of California's waivers under the Clean Air Act to set stricter vehicle emission standards have been rescinded by the current administration. So just to kind of back up and unpack that a little bit, California has some of the worst air pollution in the country, as I'm sure you all know, and a large portion of that is from vehicles in the state. And the state has authority to regulate stationary sources, and the state's done a great job of clamping down on stationary sources and trying to reduce emissions so that we can meet the clean air standards under the Clean Air Act. However, vehicles are kind of like the low-hanging fruit, or what's maybe, I guess, the high-hanging fruit. We've already picked all the low-hanging fruit, and now the vehicle emissions are the main problem. Vehicle emissions are set by the EPA to have national uniformity. However, the Clean Air Act recognizes California's unique position and has allowed California to set lower, more restrictive vehicle emission standards. California has to apply for a quote-unquote waiver from the EPA to do this, and we've done this, the state has done this, I've read anywhere from 75 to 100 times, and the waivers have already been granted. The last set of waivers, there were three of them that the previous administration granted in 2024. These are car emission standards, diesel truck standards, and a zero emission truck mandate. Combined, these would have required, or they do require, that 35% of motor vehicle sales in the state are electric vehicles by 2020 or in 2026 and 100% by 2035. So in May, the federal legislature used the Congressional Review Act to undo the previous administration's granting of these waivers, and then the president signed that into law. It's not clear that the Congressional Review Act gives Congress authority to do this. It's kind of inside baseball, but both the Senate parliamentarian and the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, had ruled that that the federal government did not have the authority to rescind these waivers. So, of course, California and 10 other states have sued, and that's, we'll see what happens. It doesn't affect us directly. We don't regulate vehicles or set emission standards, but it does potentially affect the whole state and the state meeting its goals under the Clean Air Act. There's deadlines in the Clean Air Act to meet these air quality goals, and if the state doesn't meet them, there are potentially consequences to that, like losing federal highway funds and things of that nature. So anyways, we're tracking that. Locally, I'll talk a little bit about burning. So backyard burn season ended June 2nd. We issued a little more than 1,200 backyard burn permits this season, which is up about 15% from last year. Ag burning and prescribed burning continue. On May 28th, we had the impact burn at Camp Roberts. This is the biggest burn that we do most years. It happens every year. It's 8,700 acres burning basically the firing range up there. It's mostly in Monterey County with a little bit into our county, but just the way the winds are, the smoke always heads south. So we coordinate closely with the Monterey Air District on this one. So leading up to the burn, the forecast was quite favorable for the burn, kind of forecasting high mixing heights, which means good dispersion and basically means the smoke goes up rather than settling down into the communities. On the day of the burn, the actual conditions didn't quite live up to the forecast, unfortunately. So we did see some moderate impacts in San Miguel for a few hours when we received a few complaints. We did not have any impacts anywhere else, including Paso, which of course would be the next biggest population center. So we still think it's a success, although we did have bit larger, more impactful smoke than we would prefer. Again, this happens every year. If it doesn't go in a prescribed burn planned way, it's likely to go on its own. So it's important that we get this done. And then we continue to support CAL FIRE and other agencies in conducting prescribed burns moving forward. So that's burning. Give you an update on our lawn and garden electrification program, which was started in January. So that had almost $200,000 in funding, and it's going really fast. We only have $32,000 left. Your board asked when we initially brought this to you, you asked for if we could have a buy local provision, and we added that to the program, such that if folks are buying from a local vendor, they would get a 5%. We'd be eligible for 5% more funding. And so far, it appears that all of our, all the people taking advantage of that program are buying local. So that's a good thing. Grants. So since I became the incoming APCO, I've been getting lots of questions about our budget. How are, the state's budget is, we hear in the news, the state's budget, there's this huge budget gap. The federal government is maybe pulling back on some funding. How does that affect the district? And the good news is it doesn't affect us much, mostly because we don't get a huge amount of funding. We're not, our budget is not dependent on state funds or federal funds. But we do get about $100,000 a year annually from the feds, from the federal government. And it looks like that money is still in the budget, is still likely to happen, at least for this next fiscal year. So that's a good thing. And on the state side, a lot of these grant funds that we get every year to pass along to the community to fund, the replacement of ag engines with either cleaner diesels or to electrify things, a lot of that is up in the air. We think that the farmer program, which is ag engine replacement, is dead. We're not going to see any money from that this year. We had also thought that the AB 617 program, that's the community or clean air plan funding was not going to happen. But now we're hearing that maybe some of that money will trickle through. The good news is none of that's in our budget, or our budget is not dependent on that. If and when we get these funds, we'll take a budget adjustment and we'll add that to the budget. But at any rate, certainly less grant money available from the state, which means less grant admin funding for district operations. And then, so later on today, David Cardiel will be giving our annual air quality report. There might be a little bit of deja vu. We just brought an annual air quality report back in December. That was for 2023. So we had been bringing these reports in November, and frequently the November agenda would fill up and we'd end up pushing the annual air quality report to January, which is what happened. We're trying to rejigger things and bring that to you guys sooner and try to do it in June. So that there's not this huge lag between, you know, when the data is collected and when we talk about it here. So as a result of all that, just heard in January, and now you're going to hear it again in June, but for, updating it 1 year. So there might be a little bit of deja vu. There's definitely some background slides that are common between the two presentations, but this puts us on a good path going forward so that you'll get this update earlier in the year. As part of that, I will talk about the long-term trends at the Oceano Dunes. So turning now to the Oceano Dunes, we have a hearing next week right here, a week from today. The hearing board at the last meeting asked us to develop a new air quality metric, a little bit simpler than some of the things that we've been bringing to them in the past. So they asked for a new metric to bring to them to help track compliance with the SOA. So we put our heads together with the scientific advisory group and came up with something that we will be presenting on Wednesday to the hearing board. There's no action items on that agenda. It's just an informational update. And I know Supervisor Gibson has been asking that we bring Rule 1001 updates to you at these board meetings. So year to date, so actually through yesterday, we have had 11 exceedances or violations of Rule 1001. Last year, by that point, we had had 9. So a few more this year. I take those numbers with a huge grain of salt. You know, some years are windier than others. The windy season can start earlier or later than others. So yes, year to date, we have a few more than the previous year, but I'm not too excited about it. We'll see how, once we get the whole year under our belt, we'll see how things look. And then finally, one last programming note. Sarah Wade was supposed to give the presentation on item B2, which is our update to Rule 216. She unfortunately is out, so I'll be standing in for her. She wishes she could be here, but, it's just not possible. So anyways, we'll be hearing a lot from me today. I hope my voice doesn't get too boring, doesn't drone on for too long. And with that, I will, entertain any questions that folks might have.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Tupper? Yes, Mr. Hammond.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. The speed on that AB-14 of the vessels, where they were as far as typical and now what they're going to be with this new rule?
It's a good question. I'll ask Andy if he has those data.
The requested speed is 10 knots, is what they want to get the speeds down to. And what they were, I don't have that specifics, but, it was significantly over 10 knots. And what we're finding is that the vessel companies are able to program in when they recognize that there are zones where they'd like to have 10 knots. They can schedule that in and make sure that they make their port calls correctly. And so it's become a rote process for these companies, and we're seeing high compliance with a lot of companies, and we keep bringing different types of ships into the program, and it's becoming very effective.
So is there a certain tonnage that's required? I mean, big container ships, obviously, those kind of things, but is it smaller vessels? How far does it go down?
We're really talking about the big ocean going vessels. Yeah. So we're now bringing in the car carriers, but those big container ships were the main target initially.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
Candy. The other quick question I'll say, too, I flew in that day, actually, at Camp Roberts was burning. And as I was getting closer, I thought it was like fog. It was like a halo over that. It wasn't the normal smoke trail.
Yeah.
So whatever you guys did for the weather, it worked, I thought, pretty well, because Paso wasn't, we didn't smell anything when we got to town. It was.
Yeah, we'll talk to the weather folks and try to make sure that happens next year, too.
Well done, Carl. Thank you.
Any other questions? I have one about the EPA rescission of the waiver that California's had in terms of the cars. And you mentioned that this state has sued the federal government about this. I'm curious about what's happening right now. Is there some kind of injunction so that the waiver is still in effect?
I don't believe so. So the Congress did the rescission on May 28th, and then the president signed it on June 12th, and the same day California filed its lawsuit, joined by 10 other states. So I think that's where it stands. I don't think any, you know, decisions have been made at this point.
All right. So I guess we have item B2 to discuss this further. Does that... That relates to the...
B2 is not related to the waivers.
Okay.
B2 is, it is related to federal programs, but it's a separate thing.
Okay. So right now there is no waiver, is that correct?
I don't know what the status is at the moment. Or maybe like the previous wave, like the old standards are still in effect. You know, Gary?
Yeah, you know, it really doesn't matter yet. Right now, the vehicle manufacturers and people are planning, don't know to change course yet. So until they get a decision, I doubt there's going to be any big changes in what's going on. So they'll need to get that decision to know. They've tooled up for this. You know, this is like a huge container ship. It won't turn on a dime. But as soon as they get that decision from the, you know, ultimately the Supreme Court, right? So we'll see how fast that takes. But I, you know, I would expect that it would go through pretty fast because the vehicle manufacturers need to know. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Yeah. They're all at a show in Anaheim today. So with the CARB staff, and I mean, there's quite a few, but you know, few of the manufacturers have gone out of business. But they're still pushing ahead. I think that their concerns are regarding Chinese imports and competition there, but they're still trying to sell as many EV trucks as possible. So thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Seeing none, I'll thank you for your report, and we'll go on to I'll ask if there's any public comment on the on Mr. Tupper's report. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to now go on to Board Business B1, hearing to adopt the district's fiscal year 25-26 final budget. All right, who's giving that report?
That'll be me as well.
Okay.
You're going to hear a lot from me today. yeah, I'm not plugged in here, so you're going to do it there? Okay, perfect. Okay, good morning. So this is the second of two budget hearings. The first occurred on May 21st. As I said then, I'll say now, we have a very open process where we try to solicit public input. We published a notice in the Tribune on April 16th, and at the same time, we mailed notices to all of our permit holders and other stakeholders. We've placed budget summaries in 6 public libraries in our office, and we, of course, this is on our website. It's been on our website since that April 16th day. So we had no public comment leading up to the May meeting. We had one comment since then, which we've incorporated into the budget. At that May meeting, we took questions on the budget, but we didn't get any direction from the board to change anything. So you can go to the next slide, Megan. So what we see here is an updated budget. The changes here relate to, I'll go through them, but they relate to staffing changes mostly. So you can see The original budget in May, we were just over $6 million. Now we are just below $6 million. The big changes are my contract. The May budget assumed that the new APCO would basically have the same contract that Gary has. I'm a little bit cheaper, so there's a savings there. One retirement has been deferred, which actually results in a cost savings because it defers a retirement payout. And then back in May, you approved the creation of the deputy APCO position. And we also are talking about reorganizing and making a supervising air quality specialist. So you roll all those staffing changes and compensation changes up, and it results in a net savings of $132,000. The one comment we had was related to a professional subscription, which was outdated. So we took that out of the budget. That's the $1,000 savings in services and supplies. And then every year we set aside 3% for contingencies. So with these other items decreasing, that decreases our contingencies by almost $4,000 for a total reduction of $137,000 in this budget versus what we brought in May. At the same time, some months later, we have more data on our revenues. And so fees for asbestos and also mutual settlements are outperforming our estimates from a month ago. And so that increases our fund balance available by $45,000. So a little bit more revenue. You put those two things together, and this budget is proposing to take $182,000 less out of reserves than our previous budget. So before we were taking almost $400,000 out of reserves, and now we plan to take only $208,000. And again, most of that is one-time funding for retirement payouts and staffing changes and things like that. So next slide, Megan. So our budget approach is to continue implementing the strategies adopted in our fiscal plan, which includes the use of reserves to make up for the loss of the Phillips 66 refinery. We are focusing on maintaining our core and mandated air quality programs. And as always, this budget is conservative in both expenses and revenues. And the rest of this presentation is what you've already seen, just with these numbers updated slightly based on what I showed on the previous slide. So I think, Megan, why don't you skip ahead to the last slide? Keep going. So yeah, our recommendations are that you adopt this budget and approve the attached budget resolution. There's also a budget adjustment request in here to transfer, I think it's like $3,000 from earned interest into our operations budget. And I'm happy to answer any questions or go over things that I skipped through. But again, this budget is basically the same as what we brought to you in May, with just these minor changes, mostly related to staffing.
Thank you. Do we have any questions regarding the report? All right. Then I'd like to open this up for public comment. Do we have any comment from the public regarding the final budget? No. Okay. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for deliberation and possibly a motion. Anyone have any comments? Mr. Gibson.
At your request, Madam Chair, I'll lead with thanks to staff for the arduous work that's part of putting this together, and move staff's recommendations as indicated.
Hammond seconds.
All right. So Director Gibson moved and Director Hammond seconded. Roll call, please. Yeah.
Our existing admin analyst is going to be retiring, and this is her last budget that she prepared and is responsible for that report. So I'd like to recognize Tamara Isuka for that. Sure. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but okay. Roll call, and then we'll give more congratulations.
The motion is to adopt the APCD district budget for fiscal year 2025-2026. Motion is made by Director Gibson, seconded by Director Hammond. Director Eccles?
Yes.
Director Marks?
Yes.
Director Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Director Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Director Paulding?
Yes.
Director Pichon?
Yes.
Director Robert?
Yes.
Director Seacrest?
Yes.
Director Hammond?
Aye.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right. Well, thank you. And I do want to say thanks to all the staff that prepared this budget. And I know it's we're looking at it as a single package, but I know it takes a lot of work on the part of everyone. And I really appreciate the way that this district is lean and mean when it comes to making fiscal decisions. So any other comments? No. And again, congratulations on your retirement. Thank you. Okay, now we're going to go on to B2, consideration of proposed revisions to Rule 216 Federal Part 70 permits to remove the emergency affirmative defense provision in order to conform to EPA's current interpretation of the Clean Air Act, which is not the waivers. Okay. Who's going to give this report? Mr.
Me again, yeah. So this was supposed to be Sarah Wade, and she did all the work here. So kudos to her. She sends her regrets that she can't be here, but I do want to give credit. She's the one who put this presentation together and did all the work to make this happen. So Rule 216, what is that? The Clean Air Act requires that large facilities, so-called major sources, obtain a Title V permit. So Title V is the section of the Clean Air Act. And a Title V permit basically lists all the federal requirements for that facility that that facility has to meet. And so the Clean Air Act is the act of Congress. Title V is the section of the Clean Air Act. And then the regulations that implement that are 40 CFR Part 70. So you'll hear Title V, you'll hear Part 70. We're referring basically to the same regulatory framework. And again, it applies to major sources only, which are very large facilities, things that emit 100 tons per year of criteria pollutants or 10 tons per year of any hazardous air pollutant. And then certain specific sources, things like landfills, things like solid waste incinerators, smelters, chemical plants, things like that. So in our county, this is only the only facilities that have Title V permits or who have in the past are the Morro Bay Power Plant when it was open, the refinery, the landfills. There's an oil field. We have like a section of an oil field in our county that has a Title V permit. And what Rule 216 does is our local implementation of that Part 70 program. So Rule 216 specifies the requirements for facilities that need to attain such a permit, the procedures that they would follow to obtain a permit from us, and what the contents of that permit would be. And it follows very closely EPA's requirements, basically copies what EPA says. So there was a court case. So, okay. And so what's an affirmative defense? So an affirmative defense is, and again, this is language that was mirrored from EPA's regulation, is if a facility exceeds an emissions limit on their permit and it's because of an emergency, then they are not liable for that. They cannot be, we can't issue an NOV and penalize them for that emissions violation if it was due to an emergency. And of course, there's a definition of an emergency and it has to meet all these criteria. But if it was an emergency and it was reported timely, then it's an affirmative defense against taking action against them. So that's affirmative defense, and that's in our rule now. There was a court case. You can go back one slide, Megan. There was a court case, this EPA or NRDC versus EPA, where basically the decision was that this affirmative defense provision of EPA's rules is not consistent with the Clean Air Act. And so EPA was required to remove it from their program, and we are now required to remove it from our Title V or Part 70 program as well. So, yeah, so now you can go to the next slide. So basically EPA said you either need to change your rules and your permits that might have this by this first date, August 21st, 2024, or request a one-year extension, which is what we did. We requested an extension from EPA. EPA granted that extension, and so now we have until August 21st to fix this, and that's what we're here to do today. So you can go to the next slide. So what the changes proposed to the rule would do is remove the section about affirmative defense. Next slide. We also removed the definition of emergency because it was only, you know, used in this one section. And then while we have the rule open, we're going to remove an updated reference to a guideline. And then lastly, there were a few clerical errors that we discovered that we fix. And so next slide. So that's what we're here to do today. The effects on this are, I think, negligible. This provision has rarely, if ever, been used. No one at the district can remember a time when we ever actually, you know, when a facility cited this affirmative defense provision. Currently, we have five facilities that have a Title V permit, so it really only affects these five facilities. And again, they've never exercised it. And it's not in the permit, so we don't need to modify the permits. It's just the rule. So that's basically it. And you can go to the next slide, Megan. Our recommendation would be to approve this. Again, this EPA is basically requesting us to do this, requiring us to do this. Happy to answer any questions about it.
Do we have any questions? I would like to ask legal counsel, do you think Mr. Tupper's definition of an affirmative defense was adequate?
Based on my understanding of what he presented, I think it was.
Good, thank you. Are there any other questions? All right, then seeing none, I'm going to open this to public comment. Do we have any public comment on this? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for deliberation. Mr. Paulding?
I will move staff's recommendation.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Paulding and seconded. Was that Supervisor Gibson?
Yeah.
Was seconded by Mr. Gibson?
Seacrest. Just by that much.
Okay, all righty.
It's close.
Roll call, please.
Motion is to approve revisions to Rule 216. Motion is made by Director Paulding, seconded by Director Gibson. Director Eccles?
Yes.
Director Hammond?
Aye.
Director Marks?
Yes.
Director Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Director Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Director Paulding?
Yes.
Director Pichong?
Yes.
Director Robert?
Yes.
Director Seacrest?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you. Well, I do have a comment that it's wonderful to see a bureaucratic process and provision cleaned up like this. Okay, now we're going to go on to B3, the 2024 Annual Air Quality Report. Okay, welcome.
Good morning. Yes, we'll see if we can get through this. We have a little slide advancing conundrum over here, so we're going to work through this and have some animations. We'll see if we can do this pretty well. My name is David Cardiel. I'm an air quality specialist with the San Luis Obispo County APCD Monitoring Division, and I'm here to present the 2024 Air Quality Report. In January, my coworker Cody presented the 2023 report. So this is going to kind of seem like deja vu, as Carl was mentioning, in regards to the general information. I'm going to kind of breeze through it and then drill down on the 2024 specific information. Next slide, please, Megan. The network overview is that there are 10 regulatory sites throughout the county. All but three are owned and operated by us, one owned and operated by California Air Resources Board, and two are independently owned but operated by us. We monitor four criteria pollutants, including ozone, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, particulate matter, and meteorology. Next slide, please. You might remember this picture, which is the geography and the meteorology of the county. I just wanted to reiterate that the mountain ranges that run north through south through the county serve as a pretty good barrier, keeping San Joaquin Valley air out of the eastern portion of the county. But if the air from the San Joaquin Valley happens to make it in via the east-northeast winds that occur oftentimes in the summer, we do see pollution that goes in, and the mountains then serve kind of as a double-edged sword. They don't allow for quick dispersion or dilution of that pollution. And the other one is the coastal sea breezes that we see on the coast is a west-northwest wind that intensifies in the spring and sometimes in the fall, and then weakens in the summer and winter. Next slide, please. Ozone is one of the criteria pollutants that we monitor for. As I mentioned, it can have adverse health effects on vulnerable populations, including older adults, young children, and people that are performing outdoor activities. It is a known corrosive. And next slide, please. And you just go ahead and advance to the last part of this slide. So the ozone is monitored at 6 sites throughout the county. The Red Hills, Carrizo Plains, Atascadero, Morro Bay, and Pomo Regional Parks sites are all owned and operated by us, with Paso Robles being operated from the California Air Resources Board. Keep going, Megan. These are the standards associated with ozone. There's a 70 part per billion 8-hour average and a 90 part per billion 1-hour average. And in the middle, there is a red line. The EPA has designated the eastern portion of the county to be federal non-attainment for the 8-hour ozone standard. It's important to know that less than 5% of the population of the county resides in that eastern portion of the county, with 95%, over 95% residing west of that line. In regards to the 90 part per billion 1-hour standard, there were no exceedances of any kind throughout 2024, which is good. In regards to the 70 part per billion 8-hour rolling standard, there was, go ahead, 6 exceedances at the Red Hills site. This is our design value site. One of those exceedances actually was related to a wildfire less than 10 miles northeast of the station up on the 46, the Olive Fire, in which it was directly upwind of the site, so the plume kind of blew straight onto Red Hills, only seemingly affecting the Red Hills area. The other 5 exceedances at Red Hills were in relation to that weather pattern I was talking about earlier. The east-northeast winds from the San Joaquin Valley brought air pollution over during the hot, high-pressure days, and the pollution wasn't able to disperse evenly or rapidly, leading to some exceedances. The Carrizo Plains did see 3 exceedances throughout 2024, and this actually was in relation to the lake fire in Santa Barbara, which started on July 5th and burned until August, and the smoke plume managed to make its way from Santa Barbara County, which you can see is in the bottom portion of the pictures at Santa Barbara County, northeast into the Carrizo Plains area, mainly affecting the Carrizo Plains. And there were no exceedances at any other site throughout the county. Next slide. So that led to 9 days total being of exceedances of the 8-hour standard. The following are 2 graphs that we have. One, the graph on the left is the design value trend. I mentioned that Red Hills was our design value site, and if you notice, it is the top line on there. The federal standard used to be 75, and in 2015, it was dropped down to 70. The long-term trend, if you see, is an overall decline. It's a decrease. It's going down, which is a really good thing. Notably, Red Hills has a slight increase. It went from 71 to 72. From 71, so an increase of 1 part per billion since the last year. And the design value is the 4th highest 8-hour average, averaged over 3 years. So 2024 is 2024, average of 2023, average of 2022. So it's a rolling average. Second thing I'd like to bring attention to is Carrizo Plains is also in that eastern portion of the county I was discussing. The design value of Carrizo Plains actually has been decreasing. And you can kind of see from the graphs, it's kind of almost entering into a sawtooth kind of motion, in which we call an area of variability, which it can go up or down. The graph on the right is the number of days in which the air quality was other than good. And once again, you see the Red Hills and Carrizo Plains sites are on the top of the graph, entering into that same similar sawtooth of the area of variability, with the remaining sites, Paso Robles, Atascadero, NRP, and Morro Bay, all on the lower portion of the graph. Next slide, please. This was not in the report, but I pulled some information from EPA in which this counts the total exceedances throughout the county, giving it long-term. And from 2006 and 2007, when Red Hills and Carrizo Plains were originally established, you see that we saw double-digit days of numbers of exceedances, and that has sharply declined. Starting about 2013, we start to see an oscillation in the single-digit days, thus what I said earlier, the area of variability in which it can go up and go down, but it's very little change what's going on, and we're very close to the actual target. 2020 was an odd year. There was something going on out there, and also wildfires in the area had led to Atascadero having some of the worst air quality in the nation for a period of time, if we remember. Next slide, please. Another criteria we pollute, and go ahead and advance this one until all the, like the another criteria pollutant that we monitor for is nitrogen dioxide and sulfur dioxide. Nitrogen dioxide is measured at Atascadero and Napomo Regional Park. Sulfur dioxide was measured at Mesa 2, directly downwind of the Phillips 66 refinery. The refinery was shut down, and we requested to have our SO2 monitoring shut down as well. EPA approved that, so December 2024 was the last SO2 monitoring that we were going to be conducting in the county. Important to note, there were no exceedances of any standard of any kind for either one. The highest reading that we saw in Atascadero was 32.4 parts per billion of nitrogen dioxide, and for sulfur dioxide, it was 1.7 parts per billion from Mesa 2, so very, very low. Next slide. Another criteria pollutant we monitor for is particulate matter, namely particulate matter with the size diameter of 10 microns or less, which we call PM10, and particulate matter with a size diameter of 2.5 microns or less, and this is what we call PM2.5. Both of these can also have adverse health effects on the cardiovascular and respiratory systems of vulnerable populations, as I spoke to earlier. PM10 is more related to dust, pollen. PM2.5 is related to combustion, smoke, and it's also important to note PM2.5 being smaller can actually get deeper into the human respiratory system, down to the alveoli, and actually into the bloodstream. So it's a bigger concern. Next slide, please. Particulate matter is measured concurrently at four sites, the Atascadero, San Luis Obispo, CDF, and Mesa 2 sites. Next. PM10 is measured exclusively at Paso Robles, Oso Flaco, and Natomo Regional Park. And on the right are the standards set forth from EPA and the state, emboldened the 20 microgram per cubic meter annual average. We've been striving to attain this standard for quite a while, and the 2.5 9 microgram per cubic meter annual average was just a new rule, new NAAQS standard by the EPA. It's the more stringent standard. It used to be 12. It's been dropped down to 9 recently of 2024. And also the state standard of 50 micrograms per cubic meter, which is the 24-hour block average, which we normally report on. Next slide. So for the PM10 24-hour block average I was talking about, there was 20 days that exceeded the PM10 standard. This was actually less than the 2023 report. And the rule 1001, they saw 10 violations in regards to 11. I believe Carl said even this year we're seeing 11. And at the same time last year, in 2024, we saw 9 at this time. He mentioned that. In regards to the standard itself is 50 micrograms per cubic meter for a 24-hour block average. Go ahead, Megan. From that, we saw CDF seeing 14 exceedances, which is a historic low. Mesa 2 seeing 16 exceedances was also a historic low. Keep going. Oso Flaco saw 4 exceedances. Napomo Regional Park saw 3 exceedances. Keep going, Megan. And one last one. No exceedances at Paso Robles or any other site. Keep going. Any other site throughout the county. Okay. I did bring up the 20 microgram per cubic meter annual average. It is something that the district has really been trying to hammer down. We've been trying to get there for quite a while, and I'm happy to report that for the first time, all sites within the county actually achieved the annual standard. As you can see, the highest value we got was 19.7 micrograms for the annual average from Mesa 2. Next slide, please. Like ozone, these are long-term trend graphs that we have for PM10. On the left is the annual averages, in which I talked about the annual average being the state standard of 20, is right there, the dotted line. As you can see, there's been a decline over a long-term period of time, with the most marked decline occurring after 2017. All sites are now achieving that 20 microgram per cubic meter annual average standard. On the right is the exceedances of the 24-hour block average, which I was talking about. Also, as you can see, this is new historic lows for all of the sites, Mesa 2 and CDF being the sites that are closely related to the Oceana Dunes area. They are seeing a marked decrease, with the most marked decrease occurring after 2017 as well. Next slide. I brought up PM2.5, the one that's more related to smoke and combustion, the one that can get deeper into the lungs. and cause more adverse respiratory issues. There were no exceedances of any standards of PM2.5. In fact, the standard was dropped. The federal standard was dropped to 9 micrograms per cubic meter. It's now a more stringent standard than the state, and all sites are operating at less than that actual new standard. Next slide. The long-term trend shows the decrease and the decline over time, and as you can see, actually in 2023, we were achieving that standard, and we're probably entering, once again, that area of variability where we're very low, but about 50% of the new stringent standard. Okay, the main takeaways of the report is general air quality has improved throughout the county, with the small caveat about Red Hills with the design value increasing by 1 part per billion, but once again, we're entering into a possible area of variability where it can go 72, 71, up and down. We're not quite sure yet. We just got to see how it's going to go. Looking pretty good this year. There was a decrease in ozone design values throughout the county, with the exception of Red Hills. Improvement in the PM10 monitoring. For the first time, all sites in the county were able to achieve the annual average standard, and there was record low recordings of exceedances at both CDF and Mesa 2 last year. And even with the new PM2.5 air quality standard at 9 micrograms per cubic meter for the annual average, we were able to handedly meet that. And last slide is my information and a link to the actual report that's going to be in there. And now I will pass it off to Carl one more time, everybody, for Appendix A for the Oceana Dunes.
Yeah, thanks, David. That was really great. And yes, you can sit down, but stick around. May have to answer some questions in a minute. So there's an appendix in this annual report, like all of them lately, that kind of dive a little bit more deeply into the Oceano Dunes. So you can go to the next slide here. Just as a reminder of what this looks like. So on the right, you can see some bar graphs that show the total number of acres within the Oceano Dunes that are dedicated to to dust controls and hold, well, okay. And so you can see it's kind of right around 2018, things really start to ramp up. And then since 2022, we've had 740 acres of the park that is either in dust controls or is being managed in a way that provides a dust control benefit. So that's 400 acres of vegetation that was planted that wasn't previously there. Those are those green blobs on the map to the left. There's still 12 acres of straw treatment, which is, in lieu of planting plants because they don't have enough to plant. They just lay straw down, and that kind of primes the area to be planted, and at the same time keeps the sand from moving around. There's 35 acres of seasonal exclosure, so this is open part of the year, but closed part of the year. And then lastly, there's the so-called plover exclosure. So this is an area of almost 300 acres that in previous years had been open for riding part of the year and then closed for riding to protect the nesting habitat of the western snowy plover. But for the last several years, since 2022, it's been closed year-round. And so the emission reductions related to that closure are included in State Parks' annual report and work plan. So that's kind of where the dust controls stand. You can go to the next slide. And David just showed this, but I'll show it again because I think it's very impressive. This is the annual number of 24-hour standard exceedances of the PM10 standard. All this whole presentation is going to be about PM10. You can see that Mesa 2 and CDF have always been the highest sites, and they still are. But since the stipulated order of abatement came into effect in 2018, and we really started ramping up the coverage of dust controls, you can see there's been a steady decrease in that number of exceedances, such that now, last year, Mesa 2 and CDF had the fewest ever. The year before, at that point, was the fewest ever. And now CDF and Mesa 2 have about the same amount of exceedances. So CDF has come down so far that it looks more like Mesa 2. Next slide. Same story here. Since 2018, the annual averages have come down a lot, such that now CDF is at the lowest it's ever been, finally achieving the state standard. Mesa 2 is about the same as last year. It's like a tenth of a PP, tenth of a microgram per cubic meter higher. Next slide. So here are some new slides that David didn't already show you. This is that number of hours every year over 300. So this isn't a standard, but it is a good metric just for tracking, the frequency of extreme PM10 levels. So on the left, you can see CDF. We had none for the first time last year at CDF. Nice steady decline since 2017. So 2016, 2017, there were very few mitigations. 2018, that the stipulated order came into effect, and you can see since then there's been a nice steady decrease. MESA 2 was never as bad as CDF, so there weren't nearly as many back in 2016. There were weren't nearly as many hours with PM10 levels this extreme, but it also has come down. 2024 is the fewest number of hours, or it's tied with 2022 for the fewest number of such hours at that site. Go to the next slide. So one thing that drives a lot of this is windiness. All things being equal, you know, you expect higher PM10 levels on a windier year. So we have to take that into account. So these metrics I just showed, they're easy to understand, but they don't take into account all the nuances of the situation. And you can see that 2016, 2017, 2018, there were about 50 wind event days per year. There was about that many this past year, 2024. But 2019 was a very calm year, very few, or, you know, a lot fewer wind events than normal. And then 2022, there were a lot more. And so if you go to the next slide, Megan, you can see that this is the number of exceedances plotted alongside that. You can see that prior to the SOA, so 2016, 2017, 2018, we had about the same number of exceedances or more than wind events. And now moving forward, we see a lot more wind events than we do exceedances. And you can also see that 2024 was a lot less windy than 2023. So some of the trends that we've seen might be due to the differences in windiness. You know, going from 2022 to 2023 to 2024, it's been progressively less windy. So you can go to the next slide. So here's the trends for Rule 1001. As David mentioned, last year we had the fewest we've ever had. It was an improvement over 2023, and there's been a nice steady decline there as well. And then next slide. So one thing we do, so Rule 1001 sort of attempts to correct for these differences in windiness, but it doesn't do a great job of it. I think it's a better metric than just tracking the number of exceedances of the state standard, but it's sort of an imperfect tool for tracking improvements. So we developed this differences in differences analysis, which I won't go into all the details, but I will just say that this is designed to really take into account all these nuances of some years are windier than others, and sometimes there's influences besides the dunes on PM10. So you'll see that there's three monitoring sites we have in the area, and if you go to the next, Megan, so the mitigation measures are overlaid on this slide, and you can see they're all pretty much upwind of CDF, right? And to a smaller extent, they're upwind of MESA 2, but also Flacco is not affected by the mitigations. So all these sites are going to, if it's a windy year, it's going to be a windy year for all these sites. If there's wildfire impacts, they're going to probably impact all these sites. But changes in mitigations from year to year are only going to affect CDF and to a lesser extent MESA 2. So we can take advantage of that and kind of track the ratio of CDF to Oso Flacco from year to year. And so if you go to the next slide, we do that analysis, and I'm kind of glossing over a lot of the gory details, but I'm happy to answer questions, and you can read about it in the annual report itself. Basically, what falls out of that analysis is that at CDF for 2024, we see a 39% improvement in PM10 levels, or a 39% decrease in PM10 on wind event days versus before the SOA. And at MESA 2, we see less of an improvement, only 10% this year. The previous year, this analysis calculated a 22% improvement. I'm not too worried about, you know, 10 versus 22. The big picture is that things are improving and that we're better than we were before. I think there's going to be, like David mentioned with ozone, we're at this level where I think really things are probably maintaining the level they are, but there's always like a little bit of there's like noise in the data. So we're kind of bouncing up and down. So I suspect that that's what's happening. I think overall, this is good news. We see sustained improvements in air quality at CDF and MESA 2. And if you go to the next slide, So what does this mean in real terms? So that 39% reduction in wind event days, PM10 for CDF. So on these wind event days, the actual concentration, the median concentration was 45 micrograms per cubic meter. If we hadn't had this almost 40% improvement, then it would have been 73. So that's, you know, that's in real terms. We went from 73 micrograms per cubic meter to 45 on those wind event days. And at Mesa 2, less of an improvement, but again, Mesa 2 was, you know, wasn't as impacted to begin with. It, the actual concentrations on those wind event days, the median concentration was 41. We predict without this improvement, it would have been 46. And so lastly, so we track various metrics to see how the see how air quality is changing in response to the mitigations on the dunes. They all show sustained improvement in air quality since the SOA came into effect and the mitigation measures expanded. Looks like CDF has improved now that it's about the same as Mesa 2, maybe even better by certain metrics. So that's good news as well. And that's about it. Happy to answer any questions about this. David can answer questions about the other stuff. And Mr. Willie has his hand up.
I just couldn't resist one last try at this. I think of a special note is that the PM 2.5 levels, we used to bust the old federal standard, which was quite a bit higher. And, you know, as you know, PM 2.5 is the really most serious health impact probably we have out right now as far as our local air quality, as far as anybody's air quality. And we would have been in violation of the, we were in violation of the old standard before we started all this stuff. We would have totally busted this new standard. And so the actions that we've done out there have not only reduced PM10 to levels that are dramatically lower, especially on those peak high wind event days, but we've kept ourselves from violating the federal PM 2.5 standard, which is very significant. I feel it shouldn't be overlooked.
Is that the conclusion of your report?
Yes, that's it.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Yes, Mr. Hammer.
Okay. I'm not sure David was covered this part, but I mean, all my years I've been on this board, it's like I've asked the same question at the same time of the year whenever we have this report, and that has to do with the, you know, the transport, the non-attainment coming from over in the valley. And do we still get federal non-attainment dollars because of that in our budget? I think we still did.
We do. Yeah, we still get those CMAQ funds.
Yeah.
Yeah, or they don't go into our budget. That goes to SLOCOG. Uh-huh. But yes, we are, because we are marginal non-attainment, we still receive those CMAQ funds. The county receives those CMAQ funds.
The follow-up question, you know, with Kern County Air District, I mean, are they trying to get there? I mean, it seems like we've been kind of leveled off over the years that we're still seeing transport, but are they doing anything to mitigate their problems or issues? I mean, they've got to have some sort of policies in place.
They do have policies in place, but it's more like a long-term, like the graphs that we were showing. Ours is just imagine like if you would take that graph and then slide it up. That's kind of what Kern is looking like. And it's a more gradual because as I also talked about the meteorology and the geography, Kern County is like the bottom of the cereal bowl. I worked in Bakersfield and that's what we call it. It's like that's where all the milk goes. That's where it all goes. Yeah. So unfortunately being there, that's where everything's just going to gather from Fresno. So they're not, it's not just Kern County itself, it's Kern County, Fresno North, County, all right. The Sacramento County, up to the Bay Area even. So they have been making improvements, but, you know, make one improvement, you have to make it up the chain as well to see the most improvements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll just add that, you know, it's not so much, it is transport into our county, so it's not like a problem that we cause.
Right.
But it's also not necessarily Kern County. I mean, it's the whole state, right? I mean, there's pollution. VOCs and NOx are emitted in the Bay Area and up north, and they sweep down into the valley and, of course, from the valley itself. So it's, you know, it's really a region-wide or statewide issue, and the solution is region-wide, statewide. I mean, that's where, like, these waivers, the federal waivers come into play, right? I mean, reducing auto emissions and vehicle emissions would help us with our problem here with ozone as it would help the rest of the state and all these statewide programs. And it also looks like Andy has something to say to that.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple other things that we can point to is San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District has a tremendous amount of monies that they have for grants to help reduce the emissions that we'll see. And a lot of that is tractor related. They get by far the majority of the farmer funds that that we have historically had. And with that, they've reduced a tremendous amount of NOx emissions that then translate to ozone impacts in our area. Another thing that they've done is they've completely banned burning with very small changes, or there's small opportunities for like diseased vines and things like that. So that's another aspect where they're really working to try to reduce emissions that will affect our side as well.
Thank you, Andy.
So could I just follow on the question of sources of ozone? I would assume that vehicle emissions, other than tractors, is there a sense of how much of the ozone content in any particular area, the Central Valley being the obvious place, is due to simply automobiles?
I don't have a good answer for that one. And I think it is a complicated question because it's, you know, has to do with meteorology and are the conditions right to produce ozone. Certainly vehicles are a major contributor, but there are also, you know, so-called stationary sources. I don't know if anyone else, it looks like Andy and Gary have something to say.
Ooh.
This is a great staff meeting.
This is kind of like a menagerie of responses, but you know, with the ozone issue, a lot of the things that are going on with the trucks right now, that's a large source of NOx emissions that isn't regulated like cars are. So at this point, you know, that's the lowest hanging fruit right now is to figure out the trucks and trains and ships, and those are all preempted by federal regulations. So and that's what's gone on with a lot of the valleys looking at, well, we can't do any more. We've squeezed down all these stationary sources down to a really small level. The only thing that's left is these federal preempted sources. Yeah. So,
and that's, I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's where I'm going with this. You know, the rescission of the California's waivers on federal on the Clean Air Act for automobiles. If you happen to cross paths with colleagues who know about this, I think it would be interesting for us to know, since ours is a transport problem. Yes, the emissions standards for automobiles don't show up immediately because the fleet has to, if in fact new vehicles come in that don't meet California's current standards, it's going to take a while for that to show up. But it would be interesting to know what the baseline is in terms of what automobiles contribute to the ozone load that we suffer.
Yeah. So I just might add one thing is the automobile emissions are fairly tight, and the biggest reduction with that with electrification comes from the greenhouse gas emissions, right, and not the criteria pollutants, right, as much. Burning the fuel produces, you know.
But burning hydrocarbon fuel produces a certain amount of ozone, no matter how you do it.
It does, and it's significant. But right now, I think the most significant thing is the trucks out there and the ships. If you look at the inventories left at what haven't been touched, what you could do. And so that's going to cause the rest of the state, not going to cause us any issues, but the rest of the state for compliance with the ozone standards.
Sure.
It's going to really hit them hard.
Thank you. Mr. Michon, did you?
Yeah, having been to Red Hill, I know it's right on the border, and I've seen, you know, you can see Bakersfield, you can see the whole world from there. But I would argue that you know, we probably could get somebody from them, from the air pollution control folks over there, to come here and give us an update, because they are working on it. I know for a fact that they're working very hard, and they want to be good. They want to be good team players. They will blame, as you said, they will blame, you know, Kern County will blame Fresno, Kings, you know, all the way up San Joaquin, Sacramento, all the way up through the Bay Area. So, but I think that they should come and ask them if they'd come and give a report. Also, you do have a member of the of the state air pollution control district on this board, who's not here right now, and I'm sure she would be able to give you an update on, you know, what's going on with the automobiles from a standpoint of farm equipment. They are not in a place right now for battery operated farm equipment. It's just not, the technology's not there. They don't, it's a tool, and the tools are not there yet. So for those that think that we can just swap it out, it just doesn't work that way. And I had this discussion with two supervisors in Monterey County, and they're having the same discussion because of stuff coming from the Central Valley over into their county and dealing with, you know, and kind of people want to place the blame on the farms and the farm equipment, and it's not the case.
Thank you for that insight. That's interesting. Are there any other comments at this point? I'd just like to say that depending on what happens with tariffs and the economy in general, I'm going to be really curious for next year's report on air quality to see if the truck traffic, in fact, has diminished. I know the Port of Long Beach and the Port of Los Angeles now are handling far fewer loads of cargo, and so the truck traffic, my understanding is that it has somewhat diminished because they can't, because they're kind of in a stuck place. So with that, is there anything else, Mr. Paulding?
Madam Chair, after public comment, I was just going to make one comment.
Oh, okay. Can we have any public comment on the report? Seeing none, Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. Just wanted to extend my appreciation to staff for all the hard work on this. And I think this report shows that the work that has been done, collaborating with other agencies like state parks, et cetera, has led to really quality of life improvements for the people who have been experiencing, you know, higher particulate matter in South County in particular. And so this is a great report, great work, and keep it up. Thanks.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you. Yes, ditto. So this is a receive and file, so we don't need to take a vote on that. I'm really happy that air quality is steadily improving, and I think this district has a lot to do with that. So now we're going to move over to closed session. I wonder if there's any public comment before we adjourn into closed session on the topic of the closed session, which is a conference with the APCO and District Council pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. Seeing none, I'd like to ask Council, do you want to make a statement about closed session now, or? Yeah.
I can adjourn us into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6.
Thank you. All right. So if we could stop. Clear out who's not on the board, that'd be great, with the exception of our legal counsel. Okay, so we're back from closed session. We're now in open session. I'd like to ask our legal counsel if there's anything to report out.
No reportable action.
Thank you. All right. Well, with that, I'm going to adjourn this meeting. The next time we meet is September 17th.
We still have board member items.
What?
We still have board member items on the agenda, if there are any.
Oh, I'm sorry. Board member items. I just guess I was psychic. I didn't think we had any. Okay. All right. So the next meeting is September 17th, and I wish everyone a happy summer. Hope you get to have a good vacation, good trips and stuff. All right. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.